Coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, Carl and Jason dive into a discussion involving Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, and Anakin and Luke Skywalker. What topic covers these great Jedi? Why the Force, of course. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas. Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClair and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble. Here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. It's episode number 106, So Flows the Force. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Jackson to my Zorba the Hutt. We have Carl LeClair.
I don't even know who I am.
Jackson, he's the giant green rabbit.
What?
From the Marvel comic, from the Marvel Star Wars comics.
Okay, I don't know who that is.
Okay, well.
And identity crisis!
Say what?
Identity crisis.
Identity crisis! Oh my gosh! And yeah, Zorba the Hutt.
I know who Zorba is.
Zorba? Oh, Zorba goodness, yeah.
I think I do. Is Zorba the Hutt the one that, isn't he Jabba's uncle?
He's one of Jabba's relatives.
And like he wants to, he like seeks revenge against Leia for killing Jabba. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. In the same books that Trioculus was in.
And I loved Trioculus when I was a kid. Those books were awesome. I remember when I read those as a kid. They were freaking great.
I read them as a kid and go, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I read them a little bit older and I was like, oh my gosh, what are these things? Oh, anyways.
Yeah, yes. I doubt they hold up.
No.
I think I read those when I was in middle school. It was like right as I started to read EU. I found those right before I started like regular EU reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just really liking them because it was Star Wars, more Star Wars.
Right.
But they were nothing compared to like when I got into like the Kevin J. Anderson, you know, Jedi Academy trilogy and blah, blah, blah. And we're already off on a tangent, so let's get back to it.
All right. Let's get back on track.
So our episode tonight is going to be talking about the Force. Do you guys know what that is? I'm sure you do. But it's kind of a central element to the Star Wars universe. And we've done a show on the Force in the past. But tonight what we're going to do is talk about some of our main Jedi and Sith characters and looking at how they basically use the Force. What is their relationship with the Force? This is kind of a response. Last time I watched Empire Strikes Back, and I just really found myself being caught by the line where Yoda says to Luke, you know, a Jedi's strength flows from the Force. And then he reminds him of that in Return of the Jedi. Again, it's this idea that a strong Jedi is one who's well connected to the Force, who's centered into the Force. So we're going to be kind of looking at some of our main Jedi characters and looking at, you know, kind of how do they use the Force in the films and what does that say about their relationship with the Force. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about on today's show, tonight's show, whatever time you're listening to this. Maybe it's your breakfast show. I don't know. Are you having eggs? An omelet? Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
So I love breakfast.
So, okay. To quote Riley Blanton, good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Please delete as appropriate. So, and I think he stole that from someone else. So I think he flat out said that one time. I don't remember. Anyways,
yes.
But before we get into that or off on another tangent, we have a poll.
Jason has no idea what's going on tonight.
Nope.
Are we talking about Doctor Who? No.
Doctor Who?
I've never seen that show, Jason. I've seen like two episodes. One was really good. I remember crying and I didn't even like know the characters and that's how good it was. It was like a season finale, I think. It was like at Christmas time. Anything at Christmas gets me.
Yeah, well,
Anyway, sorry. Another tangent.
Anyway, so we
have a poll that we're going to be going over some awesome responses. I don't think it was quite as crazy as our responses to what was your favorite Attack of the Clone scene poll, but this was what was your favorite scene in Revenge of the Sith. So, Jason, my friend, I hand that over to you.
All right. And this one was kind of complicated, like the Attack of the Clones poll was. Some people said anything after this point of the movie, and so whatever was on my list, I just sort of put another mark next to it. So if you don't hear yours exactly, I worked it in here somehow. Your vote did count in this. But to start things off, in seventh place with one vote each. I can talk. My tongue is tied tonight. Anyways, seventh place, one vote each, was the Battle of Utapau. The scene where Sidious declares the First Galactic Empire for a safe and secure society. Also, Obi-Wan's hello there, and Anakin crying after the separatist slaughter.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yes, it is a good one. So those were all, had one vote. In sixth place, with two votes each, we have two people that said the entire movie is their favorite part of Revenge of the Sith. So I had to include that as an option. And then the scene where the Jedi go to arrest Chancellor Palpatine and the duel that follows, and then the duel of the masters, Palpatine versus Yoda, also got two votes. In fifth place with three votes is the scene on the Star Destroyer bridge at the end of the movie. Fourth place with four votes, that's nice and convenient, is A New Hope, where we get to see Luke and Leia go their respective ways at the end of the movie. In third place with five votes each, we have the Battle of the Heroes between Anakin and Obi-Wan, the opera scene, which is where my vote went, and the Battle of Coruscant at the beginning of the movie.
Why'd you go with the opera scene, Jason?
Why did I pick the opera scene? Well, it's a great scene, and there's a whole bunch of awesome duels and stuff in Revenge of the Sith, but I think it's partly due to the fact that you and I have performed that scene on this podcast so many times that, like, every time it comes up, I'm like, the opera scene, the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise. And I just sort of go off. But yes, that's why. That's why. Because I have entirely too much fun with that scene. But before I start quoting the entire scene, in second place with six votes, was Order 66. And then first place with seven votes was what I'm calling Obi-Wan's Lament, which is, of course, after the Battle of the Heroes and Obi-Wan and Yoda have their shouting match at the edge of the lava, of the River of Lava. The incredible scene performed by Ewan McGregor. So, which is where your vote went.
Yeah, it barely beat out, the beginning of the movie. Really into Jar Jar lately. It's just been my jam. Of course. I mean, I've talked that scene to death. I just love that scene. It's so beautiful. It's so tragic. The acting is perfect. The music is perfect. It's just, that's one of my favorite scenes in Star Wars, period. Great, great scene to just, if I just feel like it, that's one of those scenes that I just pop in just randomly all the time, you know? So it's such a good scene.
It is. It's a very good scene.
So, yeah, I don't know. The duel itself was kind of disappointing to me. I remember always thinking that, and I still think that. It's not bad. It's just, I expected so much more, I guess. the beginning of the duel is awesome, but once they start going to all these stupid little catwalks and all that, I'm like, ugh, this is stupid. But then that ending is just perfect. I mean, it's the perfect ending. So, anyway, there you go.
Aha, there we are. Well, we have a matchup, a fun matchup that was given to us by one of you Larians for the end of the show. So stick around for that. But before then, we're going to jump into our topic.
Yes.
I'm going to hand it over to you, Mr. Leclerc.
As well you should.
Yes.
I know that you still are the podcast. Don't worry.
Yes. I am the podcast. I'm just pulling your strings from over here.
It's true. Jason, come on. Let my arm down. Oh, it cracked me up. Anyway. So
you cracked me up, too.
Well, right back at you there, kid.
Aw.
You know what else cracks me up, though?
What?
Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, boy.
Misa love Joe Hogan.
Misa loving Joe Hogan.
That's so good.
And we do. We do, Joe.
We do, Joe. Anyway, so
we do
tonight.
Love Joe there.
Yes.
Let's, moving on.
Don't know what you're doing over there, but yes.
I don't know either. Like I said, I have no idea what's going on today.
We're in the Wampus Lair, Jason, so be wary.
I
sense a disturbance in the force. Nope, I'm just gassy. Anyway, we are talking about some of our major Jedi players in Star Wars and kind of how they relate to the Force, how they use the Force throughout the films. But I thought it would be fun to just start with the Emperor because, yes, he's obviously not a Jedi, but he is the Supreme Sith. So looking at kind of what is his relationship with the Force? How does he utilize the Force? What does the Force mean to the Emperor based on what we see, you know, in Star Wars? And for me, I mean, the Emperor, to him, it's just the Force is nothing more than a tool. It's a tool for power and acting out his own selfish desires. It's nothing more. The Emperor does not have a relationship in any way, really, yeah, with the Force other than this is a tool in his belt, and it's a very powerful tool, and he uses it for nothing more than power. And, you know, as opposed to the Jedi we're going to talk about on the show, he thinks that he can control the Force. It's not something that
right.
you relate and commune with, but it's something that you control. And that's, you know, very evident by the fact, especially, you know, often in Return of the Jedi, you know, he constantly says, everything is going as I have foreseen. Jason?
Everything is proceeding as I have foreseen.
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, he sees the Force as it's something that he can use, something he can manipulate. He is in control of it. It is not in control of him. And it gives him this hubristic understanding that he knows the future. He can predict the future because he's in control of the Force and he can see what's coming. So he has a very much possessive relationship with the Force. Is I own this. I use this for myself. And it's a purpose for him is power. And you see that especially, you know, in Return of the Jedi when we first saw the Sith lightning. Of course, yeah, it's chronologically, it's not the first time, but it is really the first time anybody saw that. It was a whole new Force power, and it was, to me, Force lightning is just a personification of pure hatred. He's just shooting hatred at Luke at the end of Return of the Jedi. It is so un-Jedi-like because it's the whole purpose of Force lightning is to kill, to maim, and to torture. It's brutal, and it's, you know. So that's, to me, how the Emperor kind of views the Force.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's definitely sees it as just another thing that he can manipulate. It's the most powerful tool in his arsenal that he can manipulate to whatever end he desires. And I think, obviously, he's probably using it to suppress his own evil in the presence of the Jedi during the prequels, too. I mean, because they have no idea that it's Palpatine until the very end, until it's too late. And they've been sitting down across the desk and having meetings with him for years now. And so it's just another – it's a shield. He uses it as a shield and just something that he can manipulate against his enemies or, you know, and who he deems his enemies, whether it's political or whether it's – you know, the Jedi. So I really don't think there's much else to say about his relationship because there isn't really one.
Right.
As you said.
I mean, the Emperor, Palpatine would be a pretty horrible lover. because he's only in it for himself, you know? Right. I mean, he doesn't care. He'd be like, yeah, I got the hottest girl just so I can say I have her. I don't care about her. Ain't no thing.
Right. And as he proceeds to be the emperor after the establishment of the Galactic Empire, I get the feeling that, you know, obviously he says everything is proceeding as I have foreseen. I get the feeling that he's resting control, trying to wrest control of the Force in order to peer into the future rather than letting the Force bring him visions of the future, like what came to Anakin and Luke.
Yeah.
So that's true. I get the feeling that he's like trying to take the vision of the future rather than the vision coming to him. Mm-hmm. So. Where we don't exactly see that explicitly, that's just the sense I get from him as a character.
Yeah. Yeah, he takes. He doesn't wait.
No.
Yeah.
But moving along.
Yeah, so, you know, to me, obviously, you can't talk the Force and not talk Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader. And, you know, it's really interesting to see Anakin, especially, in the prequels, he has a very unique relationship to the Force compared to specifically like Obi-Wan or some of the other characters we're going to get to. But, you know, when we first see Anakin using the Force, which is an Attack of the Clones, a lot of the Force powers he uses is as if he uses it like a toy. He's very immature with it. I mean, he's standing in Padme's apartment doing that thing with the little ball, you know, which is really cool looking, you know, just like showing off, be like, yo, girl, check this. and then he does the same thing later when they're having dinner. He, you know, brings the little peach to his fork and cuts it for her with the Force. He uses it like it's a toy, as if it's something that he can use to impress Padme with. It's, again, like the Emperor to a degree, it's something to be used. It's something to show off with, really. And, you know, Anakin is very well aware that he is the chosen one.
Can I take this back even farther into his life, though? Back to the Phantom Menace, because he is the only human who can pod race. And that's due to his connection to the Force. And it's a very instinctual, very innocent, I think, way of using the Force, so a connection to the Force, something he doesn't even realize what exactly is going on. He just sort of, it's part of him, and so he grabs it and he's utilizes it in a very instinctual way. But then as he becomes a Jedi and gets to know what it's about and what he can do with it, he's like, as any kid or any person that, you know, has some concept of something, and then they start learning more about it. They go, oh, well, I wonder what other things I could do with this. And that's where he gets to an Attack of the Clones, where he's playing with it. You know, he uses it in combat situations, but he also uses it to amuse himself. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very immature, almost innocent way. But then, of course, in 3 years' time, that is radically different.
Yeah. Real quick, touching on your great point about, you know, that instinctual use in The Phantom Menace. It's kind of similar to Ezra. Like when we first met Ezra in Spark of Rebellion, we clearly see him use the Force a few times, even though he's not aware of what he's doing.
Exactly.
Which is really cool. Yeah, that's a really good point that Anakin, the Force has always been with him, just like it is with any probably, you know, little Jedi children. Mm-hmm. It just takes, you know, that skill, that honing of that particular gift that makes one a Jedi. I like that. Thank you for catching that. I would have glossed right over that. By the time we get to Revenge of the Sith, you know, Anakin's use of the Force is, again, it's, to me, like my interpretation of Anakin and Revenge of the Sith, and also a little bit of Attack of the Clones, is I think he feels like the Force owes him something.
Right.
And I think,
Because the Force gave him the vision of his mother dying, mm-hmm. and he'd been having those dreams about her dying for a month, at least, it seems, before he was able to get out and go rescue her, but then she died. And now he feels like, well, you were trying to tell me, but I couldn't save her, so now you owe me, and you have to do stuff for me.
Yeah.
So, and that's when, that's what... that's when I think things changed for him, was his mother's death, you know, between him and the Force, you know, that relationship there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but I think, too, it's even the fact that he, from the day he starts his training, he's been told he's this chosen one. Mm. I mean, that's got to weigh a lot on you. And while sometimes I think it's just him being a selfish, bratty kid, I think there's also some reality in the sense of his frustration. You know, the scene in Attack of the Clones after he gets back from his mother's death, you know, he says, you know, it's all Obi-Wan's fault. He's holding me back. And then there's the scene in Padme's apartment, Revenge of the Sith, where he says to her, you know, something's not right. I want more, but I know I shouldn't. You know, Anakin is well aware that there's this high expectation of who he's supposed to be with the Force and how he's supposed to use the Force, and he doesn't feel like he's meeting that expectation for himself or for the galaxy at large. So I think he has a very frustrated relationship with the Force in the sense of, like, if I'm the chosen one, then why the hell am I not doing more? Right? Like, I think he has a very frustrated relationship with it in Revenge of the Sith.
And he doesn't really trust it much anymore.
No.
I mean, it's a part of him. It's always been a part of him. He doesn't know anything else. But it's let him down, you know, with his mother. And now he's getting these visions of Padme. And he doesn't trust the Force to write things or to be an impartial thing or to help him at all. And so he has to try and make it help him.
And I think that's definitely seen, you know, at the end of the Revenge of the Sith movie when he says to Padme, you know, like, love won't save you, only my new powers can do that. Again, he doesn't see the Force as something that's trustworthy. It's let him down already, huge, right, by letting his mother die. To give him these visions and not let him undo it is horrible to him. He, you know, and it's let him down before, so of course he's not going to trust it. And that's exactly why he turns to Palpatine's power vision of the Force. Is
right.
It has, you know, the Force is great because it can give you all this power. So Anakin's mind gets demented and twisted into thinking that the Force isn't something to trust, but rather it's something to manipulate. It's something to give you power. And through that power, you can create the good that you need. But it won't create it on its own. So Anakin, again, he is, because of his frustration with the Force kind of letting him down, which again is it's very human. That's a very human element of the Anakin tragedy, is when something you really, really are told to love and to trust lets you down, of course you're going to become frustrated with that relationship.
Right.
And I think that's exactly how Anakin lives out, you know, through Revenge of the Sith, is this kind of frustration with the Force, but then he hears a new way of looking at it. Well, like, yeah, of course it let me down because I was waiting on it rather than controlling it. So I'm going to try and control it now.
Exactly. And Palpatine's got him in the palm of his hand there. And so as Darth Vader, that's what he does, is he marches around kind of like a mini Palpatine and, you know, uses it to wrest control of people and of planets and of things, and, you know, in order to not let the Force betray him anymore, because now he's lost Padme too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, his use of the Force in the OT as Darth Vader is very one-dimensional. It simply is a tool of intimidation.
Right.
You know, I mean, the first time we see him use it with Mahdi, it's Mahdi, right?
Yes.
Admiral Mahdi. You know, like, don't try to frighten us with your sorcerer's ways, Lord Vader. He's going to be like, what?
You want to call this a sorcerer's way?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So he's just, like you said, he's a little Palpatine. He just uses it for power. And it's the Force's purpose for Darth Vader in the OT is a source of intimidation and of power. You got to mention, though, the end of the story, because at the end, he does see it in a new way, I think, to some degree. While we obviously don't see it consciously portrayed on screen, we see he witnesses the trust of his son, trusting in the Force. Mm-hmm. And what that does is basically it frees him to become one with the Force again. You know, so, you know, at the end of it, he does. He becomes transformed into the Force. And especially with, you know, looking at the Hayden Christensen change, it's almost as if, like your great point that you made a while ago, Jason, it's like the Force has forgiven him for everything he did. Mm-hmm. So he certainly comes to have a different relationship with the Force at the end of the day, but he needed the love of his son to see that.
Right.
Because right. Whereas the Force, he felt like had always let him down, now he sees that the Force is working through Luke to bring him back.
Right. The Force is still pursuing him.
Exactly. While he's given up on the Force hasn't given up on him.
Right.
So, which is a very, obviously that's a very personified way of looking at it. You might disagree with it, which is fine, but I actually think that's right. A really good point is the fact that what Darth Vader, this hit me really good right now. I didn't even think of this, but what really hits Darth Vader, what he sees as the redeeming point he sees is that, wow, the Force cares about me this much that it's using my son to love me. I mean, that's to me a great way of interpreting it is it's he sees the Force fighting for him.
Yeah. And maybe we're looking at this a little too much. Maybe we're going too in depth with this. I don't know. But I like the interpretation. It's a wonderful interpretation, especially if you're subscribed to this type of thought process, which I do. So yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah. So, you know, the Force redeems Vader through Luke.
You know, exactly.
Through the Son. Yeah. How Christian. But I'll come back to that. yeah. Anything else you have about Anakin or Vader?
I don't think so. I think we got every point that I wanted to make sure I hit. So, who is our next character?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, Obi-Wan is a great person to look at. I mean, his relationship with the Force, because we get to see him throughout the entire saga, clearly kind of evolves. You know, the first Obi-Wan we see is this young Obi-Wan who's very aware of kind of the cosmic Force, but at the expense of the living Force, right? Like, we see that right from the get-go in The Phantom Menace.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because the way I described it in my notes is that he starts out with a very professional or obligatory relationship with the Force. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, yes, hello, you're my boss sort of thing. And he's very professional. It's not a like a person-to-person relationship. It's almost like a person-to-entity or to corporation to a theology relationship. He's very detached personally from it.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. But of course Qui-Gon isn't, and
right.
We'll get into Qui-Gon later. But
right. But I think the way he views the force and uses it, especially in the PT, especially while training Anakin in Attack of the Clones, is he always sees the Force though as something that gives him his grounding, mm-hmm. Right? It is the foundation of who Obi-Wan Kenobi is the fact that there is this thing, the Force, that gives purpose to all that he does. And I think that's the reason he's kind of a somewhat peaceful and centered individual. You know, I think of the scene when he catches up to Anakin right before they go into the cantina looking for Zam Wessel. And he says, you know, use the Force. Think. Like, I think what he's trying, the teaching point there he's trying to make clear to Anakin about the Force is that, dude, slow down, breathe, let the Force speak to you. And I think mm-hmm. that's something very real for Obi-Wan, right? Like, he's this very stoic Jedi master. And then when we catch up to him in the OT, what I think is so immensely awesome about what he decides to do at the end of Revenge of the Sith, and that brings him into, you know, A New Hope, is it shows, again, how he views the Force. He doesn't think the Force has abandoned the galaxy to the power of the Sith. He believes that these two children that Anakin and Padme created together are the future. They are this new hope. Mm-hmm. And Obi-Wan shows his trust in the Force by willingly giving up the rest of his life, right? Like, he could have gone off and tried to formulate a rebellion with Yoda right away, right? Like, let's try to foster people together now while we're still somewhat important. But right. No, he kind of steps back and says, I'm going to let the Force decide what's going to happen. And that's really kind of what he does. He trusts the Force enough to see that big picture that it's not done with them yet. They have taken a huge blow, and it's going to take a while to come back from this. But they will come back from it. And that says so much about who Obi-Wan's character is in relationship to the Force. That is a relationship of trust. And we see that especially personified when he gives his life in A New Hope. He's giving his life for the New Hope. That's the point. And it's not that – and he also knows that me giving my life right here isn't the end. I know this, that the Force has bigger plans for me. He makes that very clear to Darth Vader. You know, if you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. I mean, he's saying to him, I have a connection to the Force that you do not and cannot understand.
Right.
It's got me in its grip. It's got me in its grasp. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be safe. And I'm willing to let you strike me down in order to let the New Hope get away so that I can continue to teach him, so that he can continue to be the bright light that this galaxy needs. I mean, I think that is an Obi-Wan Kenobi that trusts the big picture, that trusts that the Force is at work doing something bigger.
Right. The way I sort of looked at it is, you know, like I said, Phantom Menace, he's very professional with the Force. By the time we get to A New Hope, the Force is Obi-Wan Kenobi's best friend.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's his buddy.
It's his best friend, and he's almost living as if he's already one with the Force.
Yeah.
Which is probably why he's so ready to let that happen against Vader. You know, he's so okay with his decision to sacrifice himself and become one with the Force. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that he personifies what it means to be a Jedi. And I think early on, obviously in The Phantom Menace, probably in Attack of the Clones and somewhat in Revenge of the Sith, I think Obi-Wan is more loyal to the Jedi Order than he is to the Force. But by the time Revenge of the Sith comes around, he's starting to figure out, well, maybe that's a little out of balance. And he starts developing this relationship with the Force more. Say what?
Yeah, he becomes more Qui-Gon-y.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, there's a great chapter in the Revenge of the Sith novel where Obi-Wan and Anakin have just been captured on, you know, Grievous's ship. Wow. It's
the Invisible Hand.
Invisible Hand. Thank you. It was blanking on me there. And this is Obi-Wan Kenobi. If you've read this novel, you know what I'm talking about. You know, this is Anakin Skywalker. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it tells you kind of what's going on in their head. But there's this beautiful scene where Obi-Wan, and this is just why I love Matthew Stover, because to me, this dude is totally, he's got to be some sort of spiritual guru in some capacity, because the way he writes about Obi-Wan's connection to the Force in that scene is beautiful. You know, he describes it as this, he's in this open meadow and everything is peaceful and everything is light. Even in the midst of this battle, Obi-Wan is in connection with the Force. And Matthew Stover does a beautiful job of covering that change of Obi-Wan's allegiance to a code and way of being, and that transformation into a relationship and a friendship almost, if you really want to stretch it. So, but yeah.
Excellent. I don't have anything else really to say on Obi-Wan.
I don't either.
It's pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of nuance because he goes from one thing to the other. But other than that, I don't have anything else to really say. Shall we move on?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about his master, Qui-Gon Jinn.
Why not?
And, you know, Qui-Gon is, I mean, he's one of my favorite Jedi, period. He's one of my favorite Star Wars characters, period. And, you know, we only get him in one movie and then a few episodes of the Clone Wars. But, you know, we all know Qui-Gon is, he is the poster child, the defender of the living Force. You know, Jason is the defender of Jar Jar. Mark Herleman is the defender of the EU, and Qui-Gon is the defender of the living Force. You know,
exactly.
But you see that right away, and obviously right in the beginning of the movie when he says to Obi-Wan, you know, be wary of the, you know, what does he say in pertaining to the Living Force?
Keep
your focus here and now.
Here and now, where it belongs. But Master Yoda said, I should be mindful of the future, but not expense the moment. Be mindful of the Living Force, my young Padawan.
There it is. And, yes, and you know, Qui-Gon backs up that teaching point to Obi-Wan almost immediately by welcoming Jar Jar Binks. You know, you've got this bumbling idiot who's just, you know, totally like, oh my God, really? Like, Obi-Wan's response is like, get him the hell out of here. He's just going to get in the way.
Whereas,
our local.
Oh, come on, let's go out of here before 4 more droids show up.
More?
More? More did you speak?
Excuse me.
But the most safest place would be Gonga City. It's where I grew up. Tis a hidden city.
City. Can you take us there?
On second thought, no. Not really, no.
Why? Is Joe Hogan there?
It's embarrassing. He is. He's a, excuse me, sir. I mean, he's a short and all, but he's a terrifying.
But anyway, back to Qui-Gon. You know, Qui-Gon is, you know, he is somebody who... He's constantly open to the voice of the Living Force. And, you know, when they meet Jar Jar, he doesn't see Jar Jar as a bumbling annoyance. He sees him as a worthwhile life who will bring something to their story. And it's and not in the sense of like, oh, this is a great tool for us to use. But it's like, no, this is a great creature, human being. Well, it's not a human being, but this is a great person.
Sentient being.
Yes, that... is worthwhile. And the same thing with Anakin, right? You know, when Obi-Wan says, why do I sense we've picked up another pathetic life form? You know?
It's like, the boy who helped us get these parts.
Get him on board, bitch. So, just kidding. Sorry.
Oops.
But, you know, it's really great to see, you know, Qui-Gon backs up his understanding of the Force through his actions, through his accepting behavior and welcoming, you know, these two very important characters into our story.
Mm-hmm. He's very much of the mindset of putting the Force first, which is why he's considered a maverick amongst the Jedi Order, because the Jedi have now gotten to this point where they follow very strict either customs or political rules or things of that nature, and Qui-Gon's like, no, I'm going to do what the Force tells me to do, and if it's according to your code or not, who cares? You know, because you know, if you'd follow the code, you'd be on the council. I will do what I must, Obi-Wan. You know, that's probably not the exact quote there, but you get the point.
Yeah.
But I mean, in the Attack of the Clones, Obi-Wan tells Anakin, holds up his lightsaber and says, this weapon is your life. Qui-Gon would be someone who would turn to Obi-Wan and say, the Force is your life.
You know? Yeah. You know, there's that deleted scene in The Phantom Menace where Obi-Wan's lightsaber isn't working. That's why he's running from the staff droid.
Exactly.
Because it got shorted out in the swamp. And that was a deleted scene where Qui-Gon actually kind of gives him, though, the same little teaching method he gave Anakin in Attack of the Clones, where he says, you know, something along the lines of how the Force is an essential part of being a Jedi, or the Force, excuse me, the lightsaber.
Right.
But yeah, no, you're absolutely right though about the fact about how he doesn't abide by the rules and regulations of the Jedi Council. And that's exactly what keeps him from the Jedi Council. But Qui-Gon doesn't care. He's not a Jedi he's not there for stature or for, you know, rapport. He's there to serve the Force. That's exactly why he's a Jedi.
He's not there for recognition. He doesn't need to be on the council to know that he is you know, wise and intelligent with the Force.
Right. Exactly. To me, it's like the perfect personification of our new Pope. You know, I mean, he's getting rid of all these crappy bishops who are clearly just bishops because they like power and wealth and prestige. And Pope Francis is like, yo, you're gone. You know, we don't have time for that crap. and that's basically, like, to me, that's like Qui-Gon, too. It's like, I'm not here trying to make a name for myself. I'm here doing the will of the Force.
Exactly. Qui-Gon is, though, more of a philosopher and a seer rather than like someone who actually, you know, applies the Force and acts on the Force and uses the Force. He's very much more in tune mentally and emotionally with the Force rather than outward expressions or outward uses of the Force.
Yeah, absolutely. But of course, you know, if you're going to bring up Qui-Gon, you got to mention the fact that he is the first one to uncover eternal life. I mean, he's the first one to figure out how to connect oneself with the Force and still maintain your individuality after death.
Exactly. I mean,
you know, the Yoda's arc, that's kind of, we get some intuition into how that happens, but it's still not fully explained. To me, though, the best explanation, again, comes from the end of the Revenge of the Sith novel, where Yoda and Qui-Gon are having that conversation, and Qui-Gon is, you know, Yoda is beating himself up, saying, like, I failed, I screwed up, I failed to, like, change in any way, shape, or form, and because of that, the order has fallen. And Qui-Gon's responses are so compassionate. He's like, it's okay, my friend. You know, anybody could have made those mistakes. Qui-Gon is affirming him, first off. And then, you know, Yoda says to him something along the lines of, like, you know, you've acquired eternal life. And Qui-Gon's response is, the goal of all Sith, but they can never attain it because it comes from the release of self, not from the glorification of self. It's through love and compassion that one does this. And Qui-Gon's limited screen time in Phantom Menace shows a life of compassion and love with the way he accepts Jar Jar, with the way he accepts Anakin into the fold. Qui-Gon is very much about the release of self. And because of that, he then becomes the master. He becomes Yoda's master.
Right.
And helps him in, you know, figuring out that same skill. And actually, this is, I'm going to bring in a different religion for once real quick, Buddhism. In Buddhism, there is something known as a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is someone who attains enlightenment, but rather than passing into the heavenly realms, they stay on earth to teach others the way of enlightenment. So they basically sacrifice a beautiful eternal life in order to stay here and help others become enlightened. Kind of what Qui-Gon does. Qui-Gon could have just passed into whatever the mystical world of the Force holds for him, but instead he chooses to stick around so that he can teach Yoda, he can teach Obi-Wan, and, you know, let this be something that can be paid forward. So that is a huge import into who Qui-Gon is as a Jedi.
Oh yeah. No, he's definitely someone who is led by his compassion and led by his desire to teach and watch those under him grow, or those around him grow, not necessarily under him. I mean, whether or not he likes Jar Jar is up for debate. I mean, I don't think he starts off liking Jar Jar, but something in the Force tells him that he should not dismiss Jar Jar, and so he lets Jar Jar tag along. And he's the one that ends up providing the Gungan army at the end of the day to help take back Naboo. So Qui-Gon decides that he has to try and free Anakin because he believes he's the chosen one. And at the end of the day, after a lot of ups and downs and tumultuous happenings, Anakin does become the chosen one and brings balance to the Force at the end of Return of the Jedi. Qui-Gon is so in tune with the living Force and how it is sending people across his path that he listens to that and he doesn't discount it simply because it doesn't look like it has any worth. Because who would have thought Jar Jar would be the one that would get them an army?
Yeah.
He's an outcast, a bumbling outcast who's barely able to take care of himself in the wild. Or that a slave boy on a backworld water of Tatooine is the chosen one and is going to bring balance to the Force. Nobody, except maybe Qui-Gon, would have even given them a second look.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. Well, I think it's it was really tough for me because I've been ranking these. Jason was kind enough to let me do that. I was kind of just ranking them based on who I felt like had the strongest relationships with the Force. So like from, you know, the weakest to the strongest. And I really struggled between my number two and number one. Because based on films, I've got to concede that Luke is not number one based on what we see on film. So we shall save somebody else for number one.
Until episode 7, perhaps.
Right, I'm sure. See. Yeah, I would hope so. Luke Skywalker, to me, he is – his strength is the fact that he has such a strong relationship with the Force. And but it takes time, obviously. Right. Because when Luke starts training for a Jedi, I mean, he's way older than Anakin even was, you know. And he's got all these preconceived notions about life and what can be done and what can't be done. So it's very difficult to teach him something called trust in something completely mysterious of all things. It's not that he can.
Right.
It's not that Luke doesn't trust. I mean, clearly he knows how to trust. He trusts Obi-Wan right away.
Exactly.
But it's obviously the fact that it's something mysterious. It's something bigger and transcendent. But Luke's biggest struggle with the Force, which is what we see in the films, is the struggle to believe in himself, the struggle to believe that he can indeed use the Force, and that he can indeed be a huge influence on the galaxy. I think Luke really struggles to do that. And we see that in, you know, when he's training on the Millennium Falcon in A New Hope, right? Like he's not that great at it initially, which makes sense. He's new to it. But, you know, my suspicion is the reason he's not so good at it isn't because he's just crappy with a lightsaber, but it's also the fact that this early on, he's probably doubting himself a lot. And then right. You see that too. I mean, he struggles so much at the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back just to call a lightsaber to his hand, right? And like, if you watch the prequels, I mean, Jedi are doing this left and right. Like, it's like as easy as, you know, opening your door, you know?
Exactly.
Luke struggles with something very, very, very basic. And then obviously he fails to raise the X-Wing, and it's all because he doesn't believe it. And I don't think it's that he doesn't believe that the Force is real. I think he clearly believes that the Force is real. His biggest struggle is can I actually really use this so profoundly, right?
Right.
Like, can I really do this?
Is this thing that's so important, is it going to let me in? Is this thing that is so big and so massive, is it going to let me access it?
Yeah.
Am I worthy enough to access it, you know? Because early on, Luke just seems to be in awe of the Force. Like, it's this big, huge, mysterious, mystical thing that he has no idea exactly what it's all about and how it works. And he sort of kind of gets a hang of it for a little bit, and then Obi-Wan is gone. But he disappears. And then he hears Obi-Wan. And he's like, what the heck is this thing?
Yeah.
This is so much bigger than I thought it was going to be. And it's sort of like, he doesn't want to touch it because he doesn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so big and grandiose that he's so much in awe of it that what good is he, a little farm boy from Tatooine, from the backside of Tatooine, how is he going to access this, you know? And it's Yoda that has to sort of like get into his head that, no, you're a Jedi and it's part of all of us. And you have the ability to tap into it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's clearly what he learns most from Yoda, is the ability to trust in himself and trust that he does indeed have something to bring and that he indeed is worthy of the Force. And it can, you know, be of huge influence with him. And I love, this is to me why Luke is the perfect hero's journey story, because it's very real. Like all of us, it's very easy to be aware of the fact that we have great potential, right? We might see little flickers of it. We may see little signs of it. We may have people telling us every now and then, like, you're so great. You're going to do so many great things. But sometimes it's really hard to believe it, to believe yourself that you're worthy of this, or that you deserve this, or something really great in your life happens and you're like, whoa, do I really deserve this? And you kind of diminish it because you don't think you're worthy of it. But mm-hmm. Luke eventually learns, like, no, I actually do deserve this, and I actually do, I am capable of this. I do have this amazing potential that is worth actualizing, that is worth making real. And I think that's a very human story for all of us. Is it's one thing to get glimpses of great things that we can become. It's another thing to actually believe that we can become them. So it's the power of belief. And, you know, when, by the time we get to Return of the Jedi and we first see Luke just walking down the hall of Jabba's palace and just using two fingers to subdue these guards, I mean, this is not the same Jedi we saw at the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back.
No.
Because what we're seeing is a Jedi.
Or even the end of The Empire Strikes Back.
Exactly. We saw a battered kid hanging off of, you know, some weather vanes. And what we see now is somebody, and to me, this scene in Return of the Jedi is so poetic. When, you know, the gates go up, which again, I guarantee you, Luke used the Force to do that. I doubt they were going to admit him.
Right.
And, you know, it comes up and into this darkness pours all this light. And in the midst of that light is this one lone figure. I mean, it's a very metaphorical image if you think about it. Luke is coming into the darkness. He is willing to walk into, you know, a crime den, into the pits of hell with no fear. And he's not afraid because it's very clear at this point he believes in the Force. He believes in his relationship with the Force.
And he doesn't have his lightsaber with him at this point either.
Exactly.
His lightsaber's in R2 already.
Yeah.
And so he's walking in there basically unarmed except with the Force.
Yeah.
And he's so trusting of the Force at this point in, you know, less than a year's time, because that's the distance between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Huge leap for Luke, by the way. But he's so trusting in the Force at this time that he's going to use only the Force to get him through this point, you know, until it's absolutely necessary to pull out his lightsaber. And later on, as we get into Return of the Jedi, we see that he's also become a bit like Qui-Gon in the fact that he's going to listen to the Force more than what Obi-Wan and Yoda want for him as a Jedi. So, which makes me wonder what exactly we're going to get as far as the Jedi are concerned for Episode 7. But
we'll find out.
Yes. In, oh, what is it now?
A little over a year.
2.5 months? Or a year, 14 and a half months? Maybe,
yeah.
No, 13 and a half months.
Yep. Yeah, she's crazy. But that's a really good point you make, though, about him being like Qui-Gon. You know, when he shows up in Dagobah and Return of the Jedi, it's clear that Yoda and specifically Obi-Wan see one clear ending to his final test as a Jedi, and that's destroying Darth Vader. But Luke is open to something bigger than both of them are. Mm-hmm. And he sees that the Force has different plans for his father, that his father is indeed redeemable. He's not just an enemy to be vanquished, but he is a human person to be redeemed. And I think that in and of itself shows us that Luke is so incredibly connected to the Force that he kind of knows better than both of his masters. And it's not in this arrogant, like, oh, no, you guys are doing it wrong. I'm better than you. It's not this arrogant assertion of his power and his dominance in the Force. It's just he is open to the Force in a way that they still are not.
Right.
Because they see, I mean, to them still, the Sith are the immediate bad guys. We have to vanquish them. And that's not wrong. But Luke just sees it a little bit bigger picture. Luke sees something more in tune with the Force, where it's almost like the Force is saying to him, save your father. Don't kill him. Right? And I think that is really important to show what kind of relationship Luke has with the Force, is that he's able to hear it say something different than his own masters. He's very open to the living Force.
Yeah. Yeah. It's... And we can probably get into this a little more with Yoda, but Yoda and Obi-Wan are still slightly limited in their thinking. Not as much as they were in the PT, obviously, by far, but slightly limited in their thinking, because their thoughts still focus on the Jedi as an order, or as a organization or a philosophy that needs to come back into the universe. So that's their focus. And Luke goes, that's good and all, but there's something bigger going on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And I think the final testament of just how incredibly close Luke is to the Force is the fact that he's willing to lay down his life for his father. And it's because he knows the Force has got his back in this. He's not doing this on his own. And to me, it's like the scene that kind of portrays this to me is, you know, the scene when, you know, Vader gets him pissed and he says, you know, basically threatens to go after Leia. And Luke lashes out at him, cuts off his arm, and is about to deliver the killing blow. And then he hears the Emperor cheering for him. And he sees his father's mechanical body and notices his own mechanical hand. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to become this. And to me, again, this is me totally reading it into things. It is not there in any way, shape, or form. But it's almost as if there is, like, the Force right then whispers something to Luke that says, look at what you're doing. And he stops and looks, and that's when he says, whoa, 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 this is not what I came here to do.
Exactly.
Throws away his lightsaber and declares himself a Jedi. And a Jedi is somebody who is in tune with the Force. His strength comes from the Force. Therefore, I came here to save my father, not to kill him. So, Emperor, do whatever you want to me, but the Force will have the final say. And to me, and I'll address this little point a little later, because I know some people don't like how we bring religion into things sometimes, but I don't care. I'm bringing it in here because you have to. this is the Christ story. Jesus lays down his life out of love for all of humanity because he doesn't want to die, but he knows that God the Father has something bigger in store, that if he lays down his life in the name of love, that love will win the day. And that's exactly what Luke is doing here, is Luke trusts in this bigger power of the Force, that no matter what happens here, he's doing his part and the Force will have his back. And I think that's exactly what Luke does. And that, to me, shows why he is so powerful, because he is somebody who is connected to the Force.
Right, exactly. And while I don't think he's as powerful at this point as Yoda was at the height of his power, by episode 7, he could have surpassed Yoda easily. We'll just have to wait and see.
Right. So, shall we talk about Yoda?
Why not?
Let's do
Why
it.
Why not?
I mean, Yoda... go ahead.
I want to take this real quick, start way back in The Phantom Menace. Mm. Because when we first meet Yoda, he seems to be very comfortable, if possibly a bit stagnant, in his use and understanding and relationship to the Force. And we sort of get this throughout most of the prequels, especially episodes 1 and 2. He has been on the Jedi Council probably longer than most people have been alive. And he has seen things come and go, and he's probably at the point where he thinks he knows just about everything he needs to know to keep this order running. And so he doesn't pursue the Force on a personal level. He pursues the Force as, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to react to things going on? He's using it very reactionary, which... not entirely the right thing, but not wrong. But Yoda just seems to be really kind of cushy and comfortable and not motivated in his pursuit of the Force early on. Do you agree with that?
No.
No?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, absolutely. Really? That's very, yeah, I mean, it's very clear that it is. It's everything he uses the Force for is in response to what's going on. Mm-hmm. Unlike the Emperor, who, as horrible as it is, he thinks he's in control of it. At least he's a forward thinker. He's always trying to look ahead as opposed to look behind.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then I think the big turning point for Yoda comes with the Yoda arc that we got for season 6 of the Clone Wars. And he realizes that there is so much more that the Force is capable of doing and that he has no idea about. And so this whole idea of the achieving this eternal life, and then, you know, is to start things off. And then that sort of opens up his thought to the idea that, well, maybe the Jedi Order has gotten in the way of the Force, you know? And so he starts trying to figure that out. And of course, episode 3 comes along and he's all discombobulated until he goes into exile and he's on a planet by himself with nothing but the Force for any source of communication. And he has nothing to do but trust in the Force and meditate on the Force and explore the Force and learn from the Force. And so I just think, you know, with Yoda, that's a really big moment for him. You know, he's almost 900 years old. He's the Grand Jedi Master. Everybody comes to him for advice, and he's gotten comfortable with that, and he's fine where he is. But then all of a sudden he gets knocked on his butt and realizes that there's so much more that he hasn't been thinking about or exploring. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Real quick about his age, you know, when he says in Return of the Jedi, you know, when 900 years old you reach, look as good you will not. I always assumed when I was a kid, I always assumed that was his birthday. I was like, oh, it's Yoda's birthday. Oh, he died on his birthday? That sucks. That's what I always thought when I was a kid. I was like, when 900 years old you reach, I was like, Luke, you forgot a birthday cake. I just assumed that was Yoda's 900th birthday, but now I realize he's just implying that that's how old he is. But anyway, back to your stuff. Yeah, I mean, Yoda and the PT, the good that Yoda's doing with the Force is, you know, I mean, he is the Grand Master of the Jedi Council, and I think he has this lofty and difficult responsibility of trying to listen constantly to the will of the Force and make it a reality, right? Like, that is the purpose of the Jedi. I mean, I still love this clip from the Clone Wars. I think it's season 5, where they go to build their lightsabers. The Gathering, I think it's called.
Yes, the Gathering. Yeah. The Younglings.
Yeah, oh, the Younglings. Gosh. And Yoda says, basically, you know, a Jedi is the Force personified. So the purpose of the Jedi Order and the Jedi Council specifically is to make sure that the will of the Force is being carried out. So I think Yoda is doing the best he can with that extremely huge responsibility. And I think that in and of itself shows what great Jedi he is. I mean, he helps organize and run this Jedi Order that is trying to do the will of the Force in the entire galaxy. So he's trying to actualize the Force.
Right. Well, at the same time, he's trying to deal with all this political intrigue and the war at the same time. So, and unfortunately, especially as we get into the Clone Wars and that starts up and everything, unfortunately, the politics and the running of the war take precedent because it's much more urgent.
Mm-hmm.
And so his peering into the Force and his exploration and meditation of the Force is much more focused on what do we need to do right here, right now, with this situation, rather than what's the grand overall plan for the Jedi Order. That's a lot of what I was thinking about in terms of Yoda in the prequels. But you mentioned a couple episodes ago the fact that you think Yoda fighting in the prequels is out of character, and I said I wanted to address that in a later podcast, and I think, well, this is a later podcast, and I think it kind of fits in this situation, so I'm curious to see why you think that.
I just think the way we see Yoda in the OT is, you know, he is this kind of gifted philosopher, this gifted spiritual guru who's teaching Luke all about the Force. He's teaching him how to be nonviolent, how to be non-aggressive. So it just, I don't know, to me, he's almost got this like Gandhi persona in the OT. So to see him fighting is, I don't know, it takes away his message of peace. But at the same time, I already can kind of retract it because I think it's important that he fights because it shows a complete transformation of his character from in the OT. So I think maybe what I was doing unfairly is I was applying OT Yoda to PT Yoda as if there can't be any room for growth. And clearly there has to be a growth. Yoda has to be humbled. Why else would he be exiled?
Right.
So I kind of retract my point, to be honest. and I still don't love seeing Yoda fight, and that's not necessarily anymore because of particular reasons. It's just he just looks too goofy. All his yelling and stuff. It's just weird. I think it could have been done better, to be honest. You know, the Dooku fight is terrible. Half the time Dooku's swinging at him, he's not even there. Like, it's bad CGI, to be honest, I think. I mean, it was good when we first saw it, but watching it again, it's like, oh, man. But anyway, that's the main reason why I still don't, like, love it, because I just wish it had been done a little better. You know, get rid of all of his yelling, for instance. But yeah, I mean, the deeper reasons as to why I'm kind of okay with now, because I think it's important for him to be humbled and to learn that, you know, wars not make one great. So
right, Right. I kind of figured that was your reasoning.
Yeah.
And so my only point to that was that, well, in order to arrive at that reasoning, he had to have a reason to come to that reasoning.
Right.
So
you had to learn that.
He had to learn it. And obviously, I think this is where he learns that. You know, in hindsight is always 20/20, especially if you have the Force. Because the Force goes, ahem, you see that? And you go, oh, yes, I know, sorry. but yeah, so personally, on a completely superficial note, I love the Yoda Dooku duel.
It's so awesome.
I think it's great. Yeah. I get so excited every time I watch it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway.
Let's go back to Yoda. And when last we left him, he was communing with the Force on Dagobah, waiting for Luke to show up.
Yeah. And, you know, and my only final, I have one little final point with Yoda, too, is, you know, when we do see him in The Empire Strikes Back and again Return of the Jedi, is he has changed from who he was and how he related to the Force in the prequels, in the sense that he completely relies on it. He lives by the Force, and what he's going to teach to Luke now, which is I don't know that it's completely different from what he might have taught in the PT, but what is essentially important for all Jedi is that a Jedi strength flows from the Force. So what his main thing to teach Luke is, if you don't have a relationship with the Force, if you don't have a relationship of trust with this, you're always going to fail as a Jedi. And I think that's the main thing he teaches Luke.
Right.
And he learned that from his own experience.
Exactly, yeah.
So, there's, which is the sign of a good leader.
Exactly. Well, I don't think there's a complete and total philosophical difference or shifting. Right. He's definitely shifted and expanded his idea. I think that's more than anything. He's expanded it beyond just the operational runnings of the Jedi, because, well, obviously for a couple of reasons. One, he doesn't have a Jedi Order to run anymore, but out of realization that he was limiting himself.
Yeah.
And so he's expanded, and in that expansion, he's also gone deeper and trusted the Force much, much more, which is where he's able to teach Luke from.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, he gave Luke such a solid and great foundation that he's going to, I've already mentioned this a couple times, but I'm just very curious to see where he takes that for episode 7.
Right. So. Yeah. So there you go. There's kind of some of what we think about Jedi and how they relate to the Force and how we see it in the movies. And, you know, hopefully you learned something or you had fun with it. You know, and again, if any of you have any insights into this yourself, you're always welcome to let us know, you know, through our social media. We always love to hear stuff like that. But we have a couple things we want to hit before we end the episode, the first of which would be our Larian inquiry. We didn't have one last week because I lost a couple, but somebody was kind enough to write us a new one. This comes from Matthew Marks, and he says, the idea came to me from listening to episode 102, and when Darth Vader says, tell your sister you were right. He says, does Darth Vader know that Leia is his daughter? He knew that Luke had a twin sister, but did he know it was Leia? So, Jason, you want to field that first?
Oh, man. At the point where, during the duel, where Vader realizes that Luke's got a twin sister, I don't think he knows, but I would assume that Luke had some sort of impression of Leia as he's thinking about his sister. And so I think maybe by the time they're having their little discussion on the shuttle landing ramp before Vader dies, before Anakin dies, he probably suspects, has a good idea who his daughter is.
Yeah.
And then, of course, by the end of the movie, when he shows up as a Force ghost, ta-da, he sees, you know, Luke and Leia together, and thus the connection is solidified. But I think maybe, you know, and I could be off base here, but I think when he says, you know, tell your sister you were right, I think he thinks he knows who his daughter is, but he's not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the way that the Force has been interacting, and this is sort of spurred on by the discussion we just had, with the way the Force has been interacting with Anakin, you know, all of a sudden, who else could it be, you know, but Leia at this point? I mean, it's the Force has done so much, set so much up for Anakin to be redeemed. Who else could it be, I think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything he said. So, I don't think Vader knew that. I don't think he knew at all until the end of Return of the Jedi that Luke had a sister, right? It's that moment where he starts peering into Luke, where he gets where he learns that Luke has a sister. And he says, now, Obi-Wan's failure is complete, you know, mm-hmm. trying to hide her from me. So he makes it clear that he never knew that Luke had a twin sister until this point. And then, you know, like you said, kind of, I think it dawns on him who it is by the end of the, you know, when he says, tell your sister you were right. I think, because he knows who Luke's friends are. He knows it's the crew of the Millennium Falcon, right? Like that's why he used them as bait. He knew Leia was close to Luke. That's why he mm-hmm. used her in The Empire Strikes Back. So I think at the end, when he realizes that Luke has a sister, that he clearly is very much, you know, he cares very much about, I think he makes the connection that, oh, geez, it must be Leia. So I think, you know, he learns at the end of Return of the Jedi that Luke has a sister. I don't think he knows it's Leia right away, but he puts it together. But I don't think he knew that until the end of Return of the Jedi. I don't think he had a clue before that point.
Right. So. No, definitely.
And, you
not.
Know, I would still love, sorry, but I would love to see them explore how Vader makes the connection about Luke. I guess it's not that hard. I mean, after the Death Star is destroyed, I mean, he senses that this guy has, you know, strong with the Force. He doesn't know it as Luke. I mean, people probably still have the Force. I mean, the Force isn't gone. It's just the Jedi are. And then when he hears the name of the rebel pilot that blew up the Death Star, Luke Skywalker, it's the same last name, so maybe he starts doing his investigating. But I would love to see some more stuff on that between episodes 4 and 5, which would be cool. Which we're going to get, which we are getting. Some of these novels that are coming out, which will be sweet.
Excellent.
So, but anyway, Jason, you had some you have some news you want to share?
Yes, I do. I just want to give everybody a reminder, heads up. I have started a YouTube channel for me and my voices up there right now. I only have one video up right now.
Jason and his voices. He's schizophrenic.
That they talk to me a lot. No. I only have one video up. It's called the channel, by the way. It's called The Many Voices of Jason the Hunt. I only have one video up. It's my channel intro. It's sort of just a quick sampler of a couple of voices. My plan is I'm going to take like some scenes from different movies and things like that and do them as the characters in the scene. I've already figured out my first one, and it's not Star Wars. It's Disney related. But I'm not going to give away what it is yet. So that's the idea. That's up there. I do have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheManyVoicesOfJason, and a Twitter account, at Jason Voices. If you want to keep up with what's going on with the channel, that would be great. And then also, a week from today, we are recording this on the 1st of November. Yes, the 1st of November. A week from today is Tucson Comic Con, and I will be going to that on the 9th of November, which is the Sunday, at 4 o'clock, is the Star Wars Episode 7 panel, which I will be on. That's being headed up by a Larian, Joey Letson. I met him briefly at Phoenix Comic Con, and he's interacted with us on Facebook and such in the past. So I'm actually meeting up with him tomorrow to sort of talk about the panel and what we might expect and stuff. But yes, that's exciting. So if you're in the Tucson area, planning on coming to Tucson Comic Con, be sure to check out the panel at 4 o'clock on Sunday.
Wish I could be there, Jason. So proud of you.
I'm going to take my recorder and I'm going to try and record it and post it on here.
Awesome.
But yes.
That'd be great. That's so fun. I'm so jealous of you.
Yes. So. And then Kyle and I have been talking about trying to get a panel for Phoenix Comic Con next summer. So we'll see how that happens, if that happens. But
nice. Misa, lick it.
Thank you. Thank you. But we had something else, too, that we wanted to address.
One last thing we're going to address before we end the episode is we got a new review on iTunes. Always love getting reviews. This one wasn't a great one. Star-wise, they only gave us 2 stars. It was from Hunter Sean, I believe it was the username. First off, thank you for writing a review. You took the time to write one, so we appreciate that.
Yes.
And seems like you really like the show, which we appreciate. Just it seems, you know, and I don't know if others are thinking this as well, but he takes issue with some of the religious rants we go on. I don't think, not takes issue in the sense of, like, I don't think he's like super pissed off and wants to like be argumentative about it. I just think he feels like that might ostracize some of our listeners, which is a valid point. We certainly in no way want to ostracize anybody, but Jason and I are both very serious about the fact that we're Christian, and I mean, I'm a freaking youth minister, so clearly I take it very seriously. I certainly have no inclinations whatsoever to make any of you Christians. I could care less if you want to be or not. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's not that I could care less, but that's not the purpose of the Wampa's Lair. The reason I think religion just comes up a lot is because it's such a huge part of who we are, just like Star Wars is, so we often see overlaps. Our love of Star Wars is overlapped by our love of our faith, and we see teaching points in both of them. So I think that's why it often comes up for both of us. I don't think we talk religion. That's not the point of the Wampas. I don't think Jason and I ever get into religious conversations. Because even religiously, Jason and I see things quite differently from what I know of Jason and what he knows of me. And that's not the point of this show, is to have those conversations. But to not bring it up to save face in any way, shape, or form is just not something that either of us are going to do, because we're very passionate about it. And I think when you're passionate about things, they bleed into everything that you do. So I see Star Wars through the lens of my faith, and I think that's why I love Star Wars so much. It adds to my experience. And I think, like I think we said this in the last episode or 2 episodes ago, I think that's exactly what George Lucas was trying to do when he made Star Wars. Is that he wasn't trying to make us all like good little Christians or good little religious people, not at all. But I think it was very important to George Lucas that he captures people's desires for spirituality. He's very open about that in old interviews and even more recent interviews. Is he felt like our culture was lacking a sense of spirituality, so he wanted to bring that back, and that's the whole purpose of the Force. It's not trying to sell you on one specific religion. Of course, Jason and I tend to see it through Christian lens because that's what we are. But, you know, I don't mean to rant about this. I'm not trying to say, you know, hey, if you write us a review that we don't like, we're going to bash it. It's not even about that. I just wanted to address it and let you know that we appreciate the point. It definitely makes sense. Yes. We certainly don't want to ostracize anybody. You know, if you, Hunter Sean, if you feel ostracized, we of course apologize. We don't want that at all. But we also want to be clear about the fact that this is something that is important to us, and it's going to come up.
It's part of who we are, and we do, like Carl said, we do appreciate the point and that you're trying to give us constructive feedback. And we take that as is, but because of who we are and how involved in our lives our faith is, it's just going to come up. Like Carl said, it bleeds into everything else we do. My faith bleeds into my Star Wars, and vice versa. My Star Wars does tend to bleed into my faith, which is why they go together and why they overlap for us. You know, my geeky stuff bleeds into my studies all the time. My Star Wars, Doctor Who bleeds into anything I do. If I have a project that in any way, shape, or form allows me to address Star Wars and or Doctor Who or anything else, I take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be my studies are over here, my geek stuff is here, my religion is over here. I can't live in a compartmentalized box. Everything bleeds into each other. It's like a painter's whatever those things are that they have all the different colors on. All the colors are mixed. It's not, I don't have little cups just for each of them. They're all mixed and it's all smeared and it's all together. So that's just who I am. And if if something happens to come up that addresses something of one of these other topics that's important to me, it's going to bleed in because that's who I am at my core, and I want to be honest about who I am and what I think, and I appreciate the point and everything, but to just explain where we're coming from, I'm not going to diminish one side of who I am just because I'm talking about Star Wars on a Star Wars podcast. If my faith comes in, or if I can use faith as an example to highlight a point, as we've done with the Force in many, in many recent discussions, I'm going to bring it up because that's the closest thing I can equate it to. And it's like one part of my enjoyment for the beginning scenes of Return of the Jedi, particularly with the Rancor and the Sarlacc. I see that as a total callback to the Odyssey, in my Greek mythology and stuff. The Odyssey, in that the Rancor is Odysseus taking on Polyphemus the Cyclops, and then the Sarlacc is totally Odysseus trying to escape the whirlpool Charybdis, I believe is the name of the whirlpool. And so it's almost a blatant ripoff, but it's more of a nod and homage. but I mean, that's part of why I like it. It bleeds together. So,
yeah. I mean, I think we just pull Luke Skywalker and just say, I'm a Christian, like my co-host before me. So, yeah, again, I really appreciate the review. And if people feel like we're talking too much religion, you could let us know. We're not going to be offended, but also realize that it is a huge part of who we are, and it informs our love of Star Wars. So to leave that out, I think, would be shortchanging who we are as Star Wars fans. So
yes.
I'm not going to do that for you people. So I'm going to be real.
Exactly.
So anywho, but again, I want to again stress that we do thank you for your review, and we do appreciate it. You know, even if it's not a 5 stars, like everything you do is perfect. You know, those are nice too, but like it's always good to get some constructive criticism. So we really appreciate it, and we hope you continue to listen to us and have fun with us. So
exactly. But before we wrap this up, we have a new matchup. And this was sort of brought to us. This is brought to us by Alarian.
In light of Halloween. Halloween was yesterday. It said it's in light of Halloween, which was yesterday.
Yes. Lyle Ketchum sent this in. He saw a couple of kids out trick-or-treating. One was Darth Vader, and one was Superman. And so he asked us who would win in a matchup. We gave our answers to comment on our Facebook page, but we decided we wanted to turn it over to everybody else and see what you think. In a battle between Darth Vader and Superman, who do you think would win?
Yes, this is our first ever crossover matchup, too.
What?
I know. We may have just opened a can of worms, Jason, because now people will be like, what about the Hulk versus Boba Fett? I don't know. Are we talking Boba Fett or Boba Fett?
That's a good question, because Boba Fett, I mean,
he just works on a shrimp business.
He could drive his shrimp through the Hulk, but yeah. I mean, it's his shrimp boat through the Hulk, but I think the Hulk might tear the boat apart. Anyway, sorry.
Yes. But anyway, that is our latest matchup, Darth Vader versus Superman.
Yes, and I think we're focusing on the Darth Vader of the OT, I think primarily, because that's the costume that we always see out there.
Yeah, and you can focus on
and that's any, what he was ringed to, I think.
Right, and you can refer to any one-dimensional Superman you want, because they're all the same and lame. So, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I already say that out loud? I'm not a Superman fan, so I apologize.
Watch it. But yes, we will revisit our answers to that question on next episode. So, we want to get yours as well. But if you want to respond to the matchup, or send us a Larian inquiry, or respond to our topic, or whatever, how can they do that, Carl?
Jason, I always get nervous you're going to forget that part. I was going to be like, and if you want to tell us, here's how. but yes, you can connect with us on Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslair. and twitter.com or wow, I got that wrong for once. Facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast, twitter.com/WampusLair, and you can email us at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
Man, 106 episodes in, man, and I screwed it up.
Oh.
So
we all have off days some days.
Yes.
But any final thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
None at all.
None at all. All right. Well, I just want to say real quick, thanks to everybody who is always writing in to us, responding to our mashups, giving us inquiries, leaving us reviews, and all that fun stuff. We really do appreciate all the interaction that you guys give us for this show. And we are both very busy. As soon as I'm here, I'm heading out to work on homework and study for quizzes. So if we don't always respond right away, it's not that we're ignoring you. Sometimes life just gets in the way of podcasting. So I just want to say, I apologize if anybody gets, you know, thinks that we're ignoring you. We're not.
Unless you're Joe Hogan.
Yeah, well, you know, that guy.
It's the worst.
He's okay. The most lovable villain of all time. I love you, Joe. I love you. I really do. Anyways, thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. It's been episode number 106, So Flows the Force. Be sure to check out all the other awesome podcasts of the 2nd Airborne Division over at StarWarsReport.com. But for Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
Yes, a Jedi's strength flows from the Force.
I got it right this time. I got it right. I didn't say on the Wampa's Lair. I said in the Wampa's Lair. Yes, I got it right.
Good. You should have a scratch and sniff sticker. This one smells like a tauntaun.